The text for this morning's sermon is the gospel which you heard read, of which I will read only this portion. Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your son lives." The man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him, and he started off. This is our text. The man believed the word that Jesus spoke. Try for yourself sometime. Read through the Gospel of John. You're going along, and all of a sudden you're struck by these words. They believe the word that Jesus spoke to them. We hear first of the Samaritan, and second of the official in our text. It sticks out like a sore thumb. We're reading along, and what's the flow of the narrative? Chapter 2, many believed in his name because they were beholding the signs that he was doing. Chapter 3, Nicodemus to Jesus, "Rabbi, we know you are a teacher come from God." Why? "Because no one can do these signs that you do unless God be with him." Immediately before our text, we find that the Galileans received Jesus because they saw the signs that he did in Jerusalem at the feast. And in the immediate context following the verses of our text, we find that a great multitude was following Jesus. For what reason? Because they were seeing the signs that he was performing on the sick. And now, in the midst of this flow, come the words, totally out of joint, "They believe the word that Jesus spoke to them." What's the point? What is John trying to draw our attention to? Is Jesus a verbiage man only? Well, that can fit the agenda very well of a audiovisual director, the agenda that perhaps I might want to put on to Jesus. But what do the scriptures say of those who believe because of the signs? Chapter 3. Jesus, on his part, was not entrusting himself to them, for he knew all men, and he knew what was in a man. What is the difference? Why is it that the one sort of faith is portrayed as fickle at best and illegitimate at worst, and the other is shown to be right on the mark? Well, we find a clue right at the beginning of our text. For there we read that Jesus came again to Cana of Galilee. Was it not in Cana where poverty was turned into opulence? Was it not in Cana where humiliation was turned into honor? We remember the words of the Magnificat, for there we learn that it is the hungry that are filled with good things, that it is those of low degree that are exalted. In St. John, we find a Samaritan woman. He strikes against her in that way. First of all, a Samaritan. Samaritan's son, as far as the Jerusalem crowd was concerned. And secondly, a woman. Not so highly regarded in those days. In fact, we find from a number of sources that it was considered that there were few curses that could befall a person that would be worse than to be a woman. Well, on top of these two unjust judgments, Jesus adds a third, just one. He says to her, "Don't call your husband." Well, now if Mr. Right number 6, he got the point. And having been thus touched, having thus been made to be touched by Jesus, he was now ready to receive the water which he had sought in him. Then we meet our nobleman, the nobleman of Capernaum. Already having been brought low by the workings of providence in his life, his only son is at the point of death. But now Jesus seems to add insult to injury by testing his affinity with his fellow Galileans, who will be leaving because of the signs and wonders. Now having been brought to the lowest degree, with no claims to make on Jesus, with no weight upon which he could insist, the man simply cries in utter despair, "Lord, come down before my little child dies." Now, this one, having been brought so low, is exalted with the news, "Your son lives." The hand of faith, having been made empty by the Lord, is filled with good things, belief on the part of the man, life for his son, and faith throughout his whole household. You know, to us, Jesus comes off in this text as being sincere. And we have that same reaction when we see him with the Syrophoenician woman. There he seems to imply that she is a dog. But you know, she accepted his analysis, and she claims from him the God's person. And in so doing, she is said to have great faith. We read the account, we take offense at the Lord, and we fail to see that we too are God. That we have no more to claim from the Lord than he. And in so doing, we find ourselves in the company of those who believed on the basis of signs. Theirs was a wait and see faith. Instead of faith and see that the Lord is good, their philosophy was wait and see if the Lord is good. As long as he is putting on a good show, as long as he is healing their loved ones, as long as he is challenging the people that they thought ought to be challenged, as long as he was the kind of Messiah that they had always imagined the Messiah to be, as long as he was filling their belly on the hillside, he was an okay Lord, worthy of their belief. But the moment that he began to talk of their need to eat his flesh and drink his blood, with the implication that they, in their pathetic helplessness, only sought bread that was of no value in relieving their malnutrition before God, that was of no value in averting their eternal death, which would be the result. We are told that they stumbled at these words of Jesus, and that as a result, they withdrew from him, not staying along with him any longer. So how often is it not the case that our faith is a wait and see faith? A faith in which we wait to see results of the promised blessing of the Lord in our lives, so that he might have gained our trust. We wait and we see if there will be business, personal, and financial successes in our lives before we will accept that he is who he said he was. And here we come to the seminary come to learn of a Jesus who is just like what we always thought him to be. A Jesus who stresses all the same concerns about the church that I would like to see stressed. A Jesus who is practical. A Jesus who would not expect of me to sort out all the details of something like baptism. Or a Jesus who lets me stay tucked away in my study chair, ever studying the then and the there, but never trying to seek the application of law and gospel to the here and the now. You know, sometimes you can have such keen attention and write such masterful articles and editorials and papers on the words of Jesus that condemn the libs, the fundies, those fanatical conservatives, the folks that we might consider to be fanatical hotshots, but we stop short of those words that would bring us low. And that is a Jesus who fits very well. But the problem is, who is making the claim? Who is calling the shots? Who is asserting his rights? Who's setting the agenda? Who is presuming before God to possess something that he must recognize? Well, to such a faith come the words that were given to John at another time of revelation, where we hear, "You say, you are rich, you have become wealthy, you are in need of nothing, but you do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked." We go back to the Magnificat, and there we learn that he has scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts, that he has put down the mighty from their thrones, that the rich he has sent away empty. You know, sometimes we read those words, and we picture a sovereign God who is on our side, and we say, "Well, I guess he showed them." But brothers and sisters, first of all, them is us. And secondly, such a sovereign God is not the God that we know in Jesus Christ. The speaking love of God in Christ as he deals closely with the Jewish leaders, ever seeking to empty them of their presumed goodness so that they might be filled with his righteousness. See the speaking love of God in Christ as he seeks to drive the Samaritan woman to despair of all the refreshment that she saw, so that he might receive from him living water. See that speaking love of God in Christ as he brings the official in our text to the point of a frantic outcry over his powerlessness over the forces of death, so that the Lord might bring to him life, so that he might bring life to him and to his family in every respect. See it as he reached over Jerusalem. See it as on the cross he says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." See it as he hangs there, and in our behalf is considered by the Father to be much worse than a dog, utterly forsaken for you and for me. Jesus is who he is. He gives what he gives. And faith, as a dry sponge, simply receives what he gives. It makes no no claims on him. It asserts no rights. Sometimes he does give a sign. At other times, he gives a word alone. But faith receives whatever he gives. You know, when we encounter a text like this, the temptation is to come away and say, you know, that's really right. And I've got to remember to have such a faith. I've really got to strive to be humble like that. And we know that great passage of the gospel, present also here in John, make it clear that this is not something for which we strive. This is not something at which we work. Hear the words of Jesus in John chapter 6. No one is made able to come unto me unless this has been given him from the Father. To us, to in ourselves, have no claim to make on God, no right to assert. Look at what he does. He gives us the right to become the children of God. We, who were once no people, are now God's people. Truly, a God who deals with us well surpasses all understanding. And so may his grace keep your heart and your mind through faith in Christ Jesus and to life everlasting.